Hello, and welcome to ngbuild-pod, where we share with you our knowledge of Angular, all the mistakes we've made, and some of the things we've gotten right. I'm Chris Kamak, and with me as always is the beneficent John Graham. We are both full-stack Angular developers that love to share and be part of the developer community. We both work here at Miles Technologies in Lumberton, New Jersey, on the Engine team, where we spent the last several years building out our Angular template for the Miles software division. So John, what have you been up to in the past couple weeks?
Yeah, so actually, I think I said in the last podcast that I've been reading about the Ultra Learning book, and I finished it. So I decided to actually take on one of those endeavors, and I am focusing on Azure. So I've spent a large portion of my free time over the past couple weeks, certainly since this last podcast we let out, learning about Azure. I'm working on the certifications and understanding. I figure it's about time to figure out what this cloud's all about. So that's been a lot of my heavy focus recently, which is pretty exciting. I'm actually enjoying it. I've always thought I hated the cloud, but I realize it's just because I was too lazy to learn it. So hating it was easier.
Yeah, that can happen.
It's been fun, and I'm learning a lot, and it's a new thing, and I like it a lot so far. And I'm trying a new learning style with the Ultra Learning, so it's kind of rejuvenated my drive a little bit. So
that's really good. So you're now officially ultra learned, is that correct?
I'm attempting to ultra learn, but one of the things is meta learning, which the book points out that you can't really get good at until you do it a couple times. So I don't think you can truly say you're an ultra learner until you've ultra learned multiple times.
I see. Well, that's
there.
Yeah, that feels like it's a little bit of a circle logic thing, but okay. All right. I'll accept it.
It sells books, Chris.
I bet it does.
How about you? What have you been doing?
Yeah, that's a good question. Mostly I've been working on my guitar still. That's pretty boring, but that's what I've been doing.
Nice.
It's not boring to me, but the other thing is we picked up this new show called The Strain on Hulu. That has been surprisingly good. I can't believe how good it is. I mean, running around in the nerd circles that I do, how did no one ever tell me that this show existed? But it's been really good. If you haven't checked it out, it's about a vampire outbreak as seen as a CDC. Situation. It's very well done.
Wow. Yeah, that's cool. I went back to a show that was out in the early 2000s. Have you ever heard of Monk?
Oh yeah, totally. Yeah.
I don't even know what made me think of it, but it's got every season up on Amazon Prime.
Yeah.
So I've been binging that a little bit recently in my free time, which is kind of a interesting show to watch right now, the guy that's a germaphobe, but
yeah. Well, you gotta admit though, the streaming video services have really been coming through for everyone in corona time.
Yeah, I was I looked on Netflix and I was I didn't want to have to buy a Hulu subscription. I've done that before where I'll buy it for a month just to binge an old TV show. Mm-hmm. And then I saw it was on Amazon. I was nice.
Fantastic.
Cool. So what are we going to be talking about today in the wonderful world that is Angular?
Well, today we are going to be talking about directives. And directives are an aspect of Angular that enables you to enhance the functionality of standard or custom elements that you create. Now, when you talk about directives, a lot of people really haven't tried them. They haven't done much with them. And there's this thought out there that directives are basically components without a template, but they can do so much more than that. There's a lot of power in them. So today we're going to discuss directives. We're going to review an example of something we created that showcases a real world use for directives. And by the end of this, not only will you know hopefully a lot more about what directives can do and some of the interesting features they present, but also an actual case that you might want to duplicate yourself, something you might want to try your hand at.
Awesome.
So do we have some quick tips we want to go over, though? John, you want to go first?
Yeah, definitely. I've got a one that has been very exciting recently. So we, you know, digressing a bit from Angular, we've been working on some of our automation stuff for the team at Miles. And one of the things we've been doing is interacting with our Git server more. We use GitLab. So I had written a few things previously in Node to do some GitLab automation, like cleaning up repos and stuff. And I had found like a couple GitLab like API wrappers. I tend to like look for the wrappers to try to make it easier to do all the calls. So I found one, then that got deprecated. I found another one, and I really was not enjoying the experience of that one and the documentation. So in our most recent endeavor, I found this package that I'm really like really enjoying called Bent, B-E-N-T.
Mentioned it to me. It's like, is it API based?
Yeah. So it's basically just like a way to do requests in Node. Mm. So like the most popular one is request. That's what it's actually called. But even that recently has become deprecated because it's just so hard to keep up with the standards of HTTP and all that kind of stuff. The thing I really like about Bent is that it's the exact opposite of a wrapper. So rather than a kind of trying to make things easier and wrapping all this stuff, it's just so basic. It doesn't really do a lot for you other than the things that you really want it to do. So it supports async await, which is a really nice way, I think, to interact with HTTP calls in Node. And then it also just like parses out the body, right? So if I want to make a GET and I just want JSON back, I don't care about all the headers and all that stuff. It has a real clean way of doing that so that you don't have to, you know, parse the body and all that stuff or use some body parsing library. The other cool thing about it is it has no dependencies on anything else. So when you NPMI it, you get one package, which almost never happens in the
JavaScript. I like that. Yeah.
But it's just been so great and it's just so intuitive and easy to understand. So it made the last automation task like super enjoyable. Now I got to go back and convert the other ones to use it. So that's not going to be fun. But yeah, I would check it out. It's called Bent. Anything, and it's a Node.js HTTP library. So anything you want to do in Node with that, I would take a look at it.
Pretty cool. I'm wondering if the name is like a nod to curl.
Maybe. I was thinking like they don't actually have this syntax, but I was thinking like you do a GET request, like GET bent. You know what I mean?
Oh my god. I mean, it could be.
Yeah, that's the only thing that I really could think of. But
gotcha.
I'm not really cool. Sure.
I definitely want to come check it out. Thanks for that tip. I mean, that's a really good one.
Yeah. Which one do you got for us today?
Mine's short and sweet. I use the VS Code, which I guess a lot of people do. The VS Code.
The VS Codes.
And there's an extension set that is out there for use with Angular that I've been using since the beginning, and I really enjoy it, so I figured I'd plug it real fast. And that's the one created by John Papa called Angular Essentials, currently in version 9. And what it does is it basically installs a bunch of other NPM, it installs a bunch of other extensions into your VS Code. They're all very useful for working directly with Angular. Some of them are just very standard ones like the Angular Language Service or Angular Console, things like that. But there's a few special ones in there that I really enjoy. For instance, like the Peacock extension that basically allows you to put a colored border around your VS Code environment. And this lets you, if you have multiple of them open, quickly identify which one's which in an easier fashion, especially if you were like trying to determine between environments like prod versus test. And you can actually set those as settings within your workspace so that they're always the same color. So it's some pretty neat ones in there. Peacock's good. I love Prettier. Prettier gets installed with that. And there's an NPM extension that really helps out with the NPM setups as well. So I just think it's a really good one. Check it out.
Yeah, I actually use the snippets like a lot in there.
The Angular snippets? Yeah.
Yeah, particularly like the template ones. So like doing like an ng4 or an ng if or an ng style, something like that. I've used the snippets pretty regularly, so I'm a big fan of that.
Yeah, I just think it's a real good one all the way around.
Yeah, for sure.
So you're going to kick us off on this directive adventure?
Yeah, definitely. So I think before we dive into, you know, our example of the real world directive and what we think is a really great use case for it, we should maybe just talk a little bit about Angular directives, because like you had mentioned, it's kind of like the unsung hero of Angular. I don't see it used a lot. People don't talk about it a lot. But that's kind of a misnomer because people do use them a lot without even realizing it. So I think we should start by talking a little bit about, you know, what's the, like, let's compare it against what everybody knows, right? Which is a component. So everybody uses components. Not a lot of people use directives. I mean, what to you, what is the difference between a component and directive?
Well, everyone uses components, but all the cool kids are using directives. So I don't know. Biggest difference really is just the way that you would interact with them. Like a component, if you think about it this way, you would like to have a component show up on the page. You're either going to do that via an element selector, where you just put it directly into your HTML, or you're going to do it via routing, or maybe some component factory resolver if you're super cool. But no matter what, it's you're spinning up an element on the page. And a directive, if you think about it, it's a little bit different. It's going to modify an element that's already present. You know, it's going to, usually the most common ones are going to be attribute directives, where they're looking for an attribute on an element. And if it appears on that element, then that directive is trying to take action on that element. So they can be super powerful, really, if you think about it, because you can target multiple things on your page all at the same time.
Yeah, so like a simple like lay understanding, I think, is like components are about creating elements and directives are about enhancing them, is the way I like to think of it.
I mean, agreed. In a very strict set of terms, structural directives can create elements. But even in that case, that's more like manipulating the DOM or repeating a set of elements than it is, you know, actually creating them from nowhere. So I think it's a pretty good overall way to think about it.
Yeah. And you actually kind of brought up a good thing, because, you know, we've been alluding to the fact that, you know, people don't think that they use these a lot, but really they do. And I think that's because Angular, you know, I like the term. I've heard it in the Visual Studio team says this, where they dog food their own stuff. Right. So the people working on Visual Studio use Visual Studio to build Visual Studio, and they use preview stuff. So Angular kind of dog foods directives. Right. So it uses them inside of Angular to extend functionality like ng4, ngif, ngswitch, these structural directives that you learn at the very, you know, early, you know, steps of learning Angular. And then you forget, oh, yeah, these are actually directives. Right. These are enhancing you know, the functionality of the DOM, right? They're taking an element and deciding whether it should appear or not appear, taking an element and duplicating it depending on your iterations. So, you know, Angular is actually using these directives a lot, you know, everywhere. And, you know, I'm sure everybody's familiar with them.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of them out there. I guess the most commons would be ngifs and ng4s. There's also things like ngstyle or ngclass. That are going to dynamically add or retract styles and classes. You could also throw in there things like ng template ref, you know, those types of things. But essentially, there's a lot of basic stuff that you're doing that's using directives.
Yeah.
Actually, you know, when you start talking about forms, there's another place that directives are huge. When you're using the ng model, you know, you're basically using a directive. That directive is the one that's doing the action of putting a value into the input element in order to have the binding back and forth.
Yeah, I always forget about those ones, but when you read the documentation on them, you know, that's exactly what they are.
Yeah,
which is pretty cool. And the other thing that I think a lot of people don't think about with directives is all the different way, like, and I think this is when you learn these things. it kind of expands your mindset on how you can use directives. And admittedly, like, we were doing some research for this episode, and there's some, you know, things I learned about directives that I didn't even know about. And one of the cool things is all the different types of selectors you can use with directives, right? So when you have a component, you create a selector that's like a custom name for your component, right? Like app-customer, app-chart, or app. These are all horrible names, but you'll pick.
They're working for me. They're working for me. I can see it.
I don't think you'd let that through on a code review, but but you know, and certainly directives share the same capability, right? Like ngf and ng4 are selectors that Angular has decided to use for their directives. But there are a lot of other really cool options for selectors with directives. What's some of the ones that you think are most useful outside of like the basic example?
Yeah, I mean, you start getting into some complicated things right away, but let's just talk about some of the things that are possible, and then we'll talk about maybe how they could be used. But you can target an attribute, which is the most common way you would think about it being used. Ngif, putting that inside of an element's declaration in your HTML, is adding an attribute to your element, and that is how it knows that that's where you want to either show or not show that container set. So that's an attribute set.
Yeah, you don't just like stick ngif in the middle of a template somewhere. It doesn't work that way, right? So it needs to be attached to something. That's what we mean when we say attribute selector.
Yeah. And then, of course, you can also use selectors that are based on classes. So you could say everything that has this class, I want it to attach to that. You can also, instead of just doing an attribute, you can also say an attribute and value combination. Might say, well, that's weird. Like what do you mean an attribute value combination? So you can have an attribute, say ngif, but you could also say ngif equals something, just like you do in many cases. And, one of the more common ones where you might see this is say type. So let's talk about an input element. If you had an input element and it has a type, and that type equals text, I could target everything in my application that is a type equals text, and you can actually combine selectors. That's another feature to think about. You can chain them together. So you could say it has to be an input element with an attribute value combination that equals type equals text. And then in that situation, you can only affect those specific elements. So it doesn't even have to be an attribute you added to the element specifically to target it. It can be you targeting things globally throughout your entire app.
Yeah, and I think the thing for me that, you know, I always think about when I'm, you know, rationalizing these selectors is that these match like almost one-to-one to like just typical JavaScript query selectors, right? So if back in the day when you were using the jQueries,
The jQueries, yeah.
Which I'm sure people are still using way, way more than they'd like to. But they had query selectors, right, for class and ID and element and things like that. Eventually, JavaScript adopted it into their API, and you know now it's just common. But directives work almost identically the same with their selectors. So basically, anything you can do with those selectors, you can pretty much do with Angular directives as well.
Yeah, and we did want to like talk about a quick example. I'll just give you a real fast one. One of the more common things that comes up with inputs is the fact that they deal with checkboxes differently. Your Chrome has checkboxes that look one way. Your Safari has checkboxes that look an entirely different way. Let's say that you wanted to, in all your situations, find input type equals checkbox and have it displayed differently than it normally does. You could do that through a directive. Just as an example.
Yeah. Speaking of examples, I think we should maybe segue into the example that we're going to kind of use as we talk through some of the more extensive features of directives and something that we've built that we use in our template. And we call it the confirm directive. And essentially what this is a really cool little tool. You know, typically in an app, when a user takes a negative action a negative being like they delete something, or, you know, they're disassociating something, something that's going to cause data to be manipulated in a way that's not easy to reverse, you want to have something like an alert, right? So JavaScript has an alert, pops up, are you sure you want to do this, yes or no? And you know, the user can decide. So that's something that, you know, is shared a lot throughout the whole system. And, you know, sometimes you just do the JavaScript alert, but other times you want something a little bit fancier, right? Something that looks a little bit nicer. Maybe it's got a little bit of whoop whoop in it. You know, things that get the user excited about the decision they're about to make.
Really afraid of the decision, one way or the other.
It depends on what's whooping at them. Is it like blinking red lights, or is it like, you know, a green checkbox? What is it? So we actually created this confirm directive that, you know, you can easily apply it to a button, or, you know, any element for that matter, but it's designed really to go on buttons, and it just gives you that behavior right out of the box, right? So you don't have to think about all the different things you got to code, like what happens when they say yes, what happens when they say no, I got to write all that boilerplate stuff. Instead of that, you just slap this directive on there, and you know, you're getting this output events coming out. You can send things into it to give it information. There's a lot of things you can do. So that's the example we have in a nutshell. And basically, once you put it on an element, whenever that element is clicked, it's going to override that behavior, pop up with a confirm, and allow you to handle it appropriately.
Yeah, if I could, I just want to like clarify too. Let's say that you did have a button. The way that you would currently take action when someone clicks is you would probably bind to the click event. So what you would do is you would use parentheses around the attribute click on that button, and you would say that equals some function that you'd like to run in your component. And that's pretty typical stuff. So we wanted something that would be just as easy to implement, but basically adds a layer in of confirming. And that layer should not only pop up the confirm message, but it should also not take the action of doing that function if it wasn't confirmed. If they said no, well, then don't do the thing, essentially. So what we came up with here, this directive, essentially at the end of the day, allows you to take the word click in the example that we've got and instead put inside the parentheses confirm. That's it. That's the change. By having that word confirmed there, the directive takes over and it does everything else from there. And if you have not worked with directives much before, or if you're, you know, looking at that scenario that we're saying and saying, well, okay, you mean that there's still a bind to click and there now there's this confirmed thing too. No, I mean there's only parentheses around the word confirm. You just deleted the word click and put the confirm word in its place. And that's what makes it so powerful. It's doing everything for you behind the scenes.
Yeah, and let's linger on that for just a second, because you said something there that it may not have connected the dots, but when you explained this to me early on in the Angular days, I was like, whoa, this is really cool. So you were using the example of binding to like an HTML DOM event, right, which is the click event. And what the cool thing, and I'm going to change the terminology so that I think it's more obvious, right? So when we built the selector for the confirm, we actually call it MT confirm, right? Because we're Miles Technologies, so we're real clever with our naming. We use MT in front of everything. So we call it MT confirm. So just normally when you're doing a directive, like say an NGIF or something like that, you stick it on, or like ng style is probably a better one because that's not structural. You stick it on the element, and then you usually give it like an input or you give it some sort of action, right? But what Angular does that's like so cool is, you know, you can, it has like a default event, right? I don't know what's the best way to describe this. Maybe you have a better way. But just because, you know, it's called MT confirm and you're binding to it, you're automatically binding to an output event inside of that that directive that has the same name, right? You don't have to do anything special with it.
Well, true, but not true. I mean, it definitely you get this event in there. However, the reason that event exists is because when we get into the building of the directive, there is an at output we have created with the exact same name. So you may be used to in components where you do at input and at output, and that basically are attributes on your component. Well, the directive works the same way. Once it recognizes via the selector that this directive is supposed to be there, now you have access to all of the attributes, including the one that you used as a selector. So by having the at output mtconfirm in the directive, that's what creates that clickable output event that we can now use.
Yeah, and you don't have to, the big thing is, you don't have, an extra event on top of, you don't have to put the directive on the element and then also bind to an output, right? It's all kind of encapsulated in one thing.
Right, because it is powerful enough to recognize that I can use it as a selector and I can use it as an input-output property.
Right, yeah, awesome. So one of the things that I think could get a little confusing for people when they're working with directives is when they want to do inputs with them as well, right? Because a directive is just like a property and you don't think of it like an input, right? So when you're doing a component, you have you can square bracket, throw inputs equals, your value on the component element on the screen, right? So that's kind of, I think, more intuitive. It's HTML-like, so it's easy for people to understand. But things do get a little bit tricky syntactically with directives and input properties. And do you want to maybe just walk me through how that works?
Sure. I mean, so as I was saying before, I mean, the big thing to keep in mind here is that once you've selected into this element, by putting the mtconfirm as an attribute on this element, you have now said, yep, this directive goes on that element. Now you have access to all of the attributes, including other ones you choose to make up. So let's say that you had this mtconfirm, and you also wanted to maybe have an options set. Or let's say you've got two events that you'd like to do, one that's a confirm, one that's a cancel. If you wanted to be able to do that, you would just have multiple at outputs, or in the case of the config, an at input with its own name, just like you would if you were doing it as a component. Again, as long as those names match up to the element's names, then you're going to be able to use them.
Yeah, and I think that structure, once you do it a couple times, it kind of comes naturally to you. You can sort of see the difference that that you have with inputs and outputs and things like that. One of the things that I think is really cool, I don't know if we want to jump off of inputs and outputs yet, but one of the cool things that I like about directives too is their ability to do things with host binding and host listeners. Do you want to touch on anything else with the inputs and outputs before we jump on that?
No, I think we can come back to those two because it's kind of important to talk about all the things it can do, and then we can talk about specific implementations within our example. At least I think that's a good way to go.
Yeah, so one of the cool things is, I guess it's considered a decorator, is what they call it in Angular, where you can actually decorate a method inside of the directive with something like at host listener and at host binding. And I guess quickly the difference between the two, because why the heck do they have two? There's always two of everything. So typically, and it's real easy actually to rationalize the differences. So with normal components, you have inputs, which are property bound, and you have event bound things with the parentheses, right? And the host listener and host binding kind of has the same separation. So with a host listener, you're binding to the events that could happen when you click the element the directive is extending, right? So if I put a directive on a button and I create a host listener for click, when the click happens, the method that you define below that is going to fire, right?
Yeah.
With host binding, it's a way to actually attach to properties that are on a directive, right? So rather than looking for events like click or focus or whatever, it's going to look for things that happen with the properties on an element, like disabled, stuff like that. So those are the two that you're going to see. In this example, we are using the host listener, right? Because it's a button and, this is a confirm. It's like an event we're trying to do. So we actually hook into the click event. And it lets us extend that functionality, right? So normally when you click this, it would do like maybe a form submit or something like that. But we can say, whoa, before you do that, I want you to take care of this, popping this alert kind of thing. So we're not using the host binding here, but it's pretty cool because you can interrogate the properties on the element that the directive is extending, right? So is this disabled? Does it have this style? Does it have this property on it? This kind of thing. Like you were saying that kind of like the selector before, this lets you kind of interrogate it on the fly when an action is taking place.
Yeah, and it's more like DOM specific properties, you know. So like for instance, you mentioned disabled. I think that's a great one. It's possible if I were to do like an at input disabled, that's not really defined in the HTML. So I'm not that's not really a great way to try to hook into that. But if I know that this element that I'm on as a directive, which of course that's what it means by host, right? Host is the element I'm on. So if I host bind to disabled, I can set that value. I can say, hey, disabled, set that to true while we're checking for this confirm state. Now, in our situation, we're using a modal, which basically doesn't let you click anything behind the modal anyway. So that's kind of pointless. But imagine a scenario where that was something we wanted to do, where we wanted to disable the button during the action sequence and then re-enable it later. That could all be done through host binding.
Yeah, we do actually have another control that does that.
That's true.
You know, to prevent like double submits and things like that. So we have used that in the past. So let's maybe dive into the host listener a little bit more in our specific example, because I think this is really going to illuminate some of the possibilities of directives that most people don't have or don't understand. Yeah. So in our case with the host listener, we hook into the click event, as I mentioned before, right? Because usually you're going to attach this confirm to a button. And now, you know, we could just say throw a JavaScript alert and that would do the job. But again, in our case, you know, those aren't always the nicest looking and, you know, users want pretty pictures. So we've actually been able to leverage underneath of this directive a dependency on suite alerts, right? And I think we've talked about suite alerts in the past. They're basically just really nice, simple pop-ups or modals, right? And you can create confirms, you can create custom ones, you can create informational ones, a bunch of different things. So what we do is we just say, hey, anytime you click whatever element is attached to this, we want you to pop up a confirm suite alert, a predefined suite alert that has, you know, yes or cancel or save or whatever. And it gives you those like two different events being, do I need to cancel this or do I need to let it through? And it kind of houses all that functionality. So this is where, you know, you attach this click event and you think, well, what do I need to do with a click event, right? But you can inject in essentially this whole element that wouldn't normally happen when you're clicking on this thing.
Yeah, yeah. Not only that, we can also do a prevent default on that click so it doesn't do anything else by mistake, possibly. So we want to stop and capture this event, do not let it propagate anywhere forward, and then wait. And if someone confirms it, we'll let it go. We'll let it do whatever it was going to do before. That's really like the very simple version of what this confirm directive is all about.
Yeah, and one of the cool things is, you know, because it's a directive, not only does it have these output events to handle whether or not you click OK or cancel, but you can pass values in, right? So because we're using the suite alerts package, this provides the ability to give it a configuration. So I said before, you know, it pops up a nice window. Maybe you wanted to say save or cancel. Maybe you wanted to say yes or no. Maybe you wanted to say okay, not okay, stop, start, you know, whatever you want it to be. And you want to change the colors of it and all that stuff.
Wait. What was the really, really bad Windows thing that they did where it was confirm or deny? Wasn't there like a Windows version that came out that ended up throwing like tons of confirmations in for every security thing ever? The only reason I remember it is one of those Mac commercials where they had the Mac Windows PC. Do you remember those commercials?
Yeah.
They had the one guy who was supposedly a Mac and the other guy who was supposedly a PC.
Yeah.
And the PC guy had like a security person behind him with glasses on that said, do you want to actually click that? He's like, yes. Do you want to install that? Yes. Are you sure you want to get that cup of coffee? Yes. And, you know, so confirm or deny. Anyway, I hate to derail us. I just had to throw that in.
I think that's got to be either Vista or early XP error if I'm like...
Yes, I'm so old, I can't help it.
We're not talking about ME or anything like that. So you're not in the danger zone yet. But yeah, the cool thing that it allows you to do is, you know, Suite Alerts let you pass in options. And so obviously we have defaults, right? Because a confirm window, you know, by default, you want it to look similar to a JavaScript confirm, okay or cancel. But, you know, since we're giving this directive and we're not really directly exposing the functionality, we want to give people a way to extend it or change it. So we can just utilize the input property on the directive and let people pass in options for the suite alert, which is really awesome because now they can just say, hey, you know, I don't want it to say okay, I want it to say yes or no, that kind of thing. And they still get to leverage our directive that handles, again, all the events of firing the suite alert, and I don't got to deal with all this mess.
Yeah, and of course, this is one of those cases where what we're doing is we're presenting a configuration option where they can override just one piece of it. If all they wanted to do was to change the text in the cancel side, just that part, but everything else should default to whatever the defaults are. You know, the way we've built this using object assign, we take the thing they passed in, we pass that to the left, to the left, to the left, and using object assign, and we end up with a complete configuration each time that is consistent.
Yeah, love me some object assign in my life. Mm-hmm. Remember what we did before we learned about object assign? Should we share it with the people at home so they don't feel bad about themselves?
Well, I'm sure that they have, in some point in their past, written a statement that probably says something like config space ampersand ampersand space config dot default space ampersand ampersand space config dot default dot max length or something like that. Yeah, that's the non-object assign way of doing that.
I think what's even worse is we weren't even using objects very early on, right?
Ooh,
we just
yeah.
did parameters and then optional parameters, and then you had to add an optional parameter on the end, and you would do, you know, empty string, empty string, empty string, null, 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 null. True.
Yeah, those were the days. Well, all right, so back to this real quick. I think it's now time that we nail down these inputs, outputs for our scenario.
Yeah.
So what we did is we have a selector, and the selector is empty confirm. Basically just says we have to have an attribute on the element that says empty confirm. As long as we've got that, this directive is going to be there. And we also said, okay, let's have an output event named empty confirm. And the reason we did that is because we still wanted you to be able to have the same style that you had for click. And we're not going to fire that event off unless the confirmation comes back with a yes. That's basically it. When do we fire off the output event for MT confirm? Whenever they say yes to the confirmation. We also, though, need to know sometimes when they explicitly cancel. We may want to take an action then. So we also created an output event for cancel. And similarly, that doesn't ever fire off until someone explicitly cancels the confirmation window. And then the last one is this options one you're talking about. And so for that one, we just named it, you know, because we're so good at names, we just named it MT confirm options, and that's another input. So actually, it's two outputs and an input, essentially, is what it comes down to. Do you think that's enough of an explanation? Did we cover it enough?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it doesn't handle what happens when you click yes or no. Again, it's just about the framework, right? So it gives you the ability to hook into a yes or no, which is typical. Like if you do an alert, you get a promise. If you're in the JavaScript world, you know, in our case, it's an observable. And if the value is true, they clicked yes. If the value is anything else, they clicked cancel, no, whatever the case is. So you could just bind to that stuff and you'll handle it, you know, appropriately, which, you know, most of the time you really only need to bind to the true, because when they click cancel, you just don't do anything.
Usually.
Yeah. So it's nice because like we have that extra output, but it's really not any extra work unless you have like a specific scenario, like you want to reload the page maybe or something weird like that when they click cancel.
Yeah, like maybe it's like a revert or something like that.
Yeah, yeah. In most cases, though, you're just going to ignore it, and you only need to hook into the OK. But yeah, so I think that's kind of like a really nice example of, you know, directives that we've done to help you know, extend functionality, but do it in a way that is consistent. Right? Because, you know, what's the point? Like, you don't really need to write this directive, you know, with all this functionality. But here, you know, all these applications, you know, they need to have this common functionality. We don't want 10 ways to skin a cat, right? Like, I don't want somebody that does suite alerts this way and does suite alerts that way. Actually, I don't even want them to know they're using suite alerts, right? Like, that's right. The cool thing about this being in a directive is, you know, if I decide later or suite alerts becomes like some paid license and I want to swap it out, I don't have to go to all these places where I'm popping these confirms and change it. I just go to the one place I have this directive, swap out the library for something else. The interface should be pretty much the same, you know, an output with a yes or a no, and an input with some properties to configure it, and you're good to go. So architecturally wise, using a directive here saves us a lot of time in the future. It also abstracts away the dependency that we don't really want developers to have to worry about on a day-to-day basis.
Yeah, I agree. And I can tell you exactly when I realized that we needed to do something like this, and I brought it to you, and I remember we were like, we gotta fix this, John. It was about a year and a half, maybe a little bit more ago, working on a project, coming in to help out with a project, actually. And this was a project that had at least 5 or 6 different developers' hands in it. And I'm sitting there going through the UI, testing out the system because I want to know how it works before I have to do my task. Like that's just my way. So I'm clicking through it and I'm like, confirmation. That's very nice. And then I go through another spot and it's a confirmation, but it's not the same confirmation. In fact, it's not even the same program. One was a suite alert and one was not. I don't forget what the other one was. And then there was another one that was a suite alert for a third instance, but yet it used a completely different color scheme and font scheme. So they didn't look the same. So I was like, oh, man. This is what happens, though, when you have multiple developers all coming up with a solution to their specific problem versus one cohesive thought process about how to do something. And a directive, a great way to be cohesive, right? Like right from the jump, you have everything contained in one spot.
Yeah, definitely. I think probably, you know, and we're going to come up with, I think, the crazy use cases for directives as well in some of our future episodes. We definitely talked about it briefly in the episode on, you know, cleaning up components and structuring them better, because we talked about using a directive as a container for dynamic components and stuff like that. And I think we're going to get into some of that in the future here when we talk about dynamic forms and things like that, where we've used directives to help us with that. But one of the interesting things that I think you brought up when we were discussing this topic, and this is where your knowledge of Angular far supersedes mine, but I think we have some time. Maybe do you want to talk about like an example of like extending existing directives or anything, like just the concept of that, so people are aware?
Sure.
It's possible.
Sure, sure. I completely disagree with your assessment, though. So we'll just glaze over that. I haven't actually done this yet, but I've seen examples where people needed to have some sort of specialized behavior for their NG4. So you may be thinking to yourself, an NG4 is already set up. I'm not going to mess with that. You know, and I can't get the behavior that I want because I really would like it. Let's say, for instance, if the NG4 always ran a sort, let's say, on an order property prior to actually displaying all the information. That way you wouldn't have to do it in all of your components. That'd be nice if that was a setup in your system that you always had a property named order. So, you know, you could, and I've seen examples of this, again, not done it myself, you could actually take NG4, which is itself just a directive, and you could just put an extra piece of logic in there that says, hey, when you get the items in your NG4 example, let's go ahead and run an order by statement on that first. You certainly could do something like that. You could also come up with an NG if, that is tied to a property. Like if you're always binding to the same property for your NGIFs, you could build one that's specific to your scenario, which would be NGIF show. Let's say you always have a property named show on your objects that determine whether they should be there or not. There are lots of things that you could do, but essentially, if you take a look at the directives for NG4 and NGIF, just look over the code for it. They're not actually that complex. Like, what they're doing is pretty straightforward stuff. Now, how they're doing it is super cool, but the actual concept of them, not really that big a deal, right?
Yeah, I mean, let's not forget this is all open source, so you can go check it out whenever you want to see what they're doing. But yeah, I think that's a cool, like, just concept. And, you know, if the people listening are interested, let us know. I know we've extended you know, the Angular prototypes and even JavaScript prototypes for that matter, like the data object, in interesting ways. And I think we could do an episode on that if people are interested. But, you know, certainly that's what I would consider to be like a real advanced use case. Because, you know, all the examples you gave, you can certainly achieve without extending, right? Like you can order an NG4 with a pipe or something like that. So there's ways to do it other, you know, and, you know, again, there's a bunch of ways to accomplish everything with Angular. But it is interesting to just kind of be aware of the concepts.
Yeah, definitely.
Cool. Awesome. So I guess, you know, now's a good time to move into our final thoughts on directives, unless there's any other major topics you want to touch on.
No, I think we've hit quite a bit on that. So I'll go ahead and jump in first with my final thoughts here, if you don't mind.
I'll allow it.
thank you. Thank you so much. You know, I'll be honest with all of our listeners here. I have made maybe 3 directives. You know, we're sitting here explaining that they're kind of underutilized and that maybe people are avoiding them because they maybe don't know enough about them. But the fact of the matter is, I just haven't had that many cases that have come up that I've really wanted to do it. Although, I think that's mainly because I haven't let my imagination run wild yet. You know, like I'm still in the world of thinking I'm shackled to a selector and an element and something that I can explicitly put into HTML. If I really sat down and thought about it, I could probably come up with a lot better uses. So I think, if anything, I would ask that, you know, anyone who's considering working more with directives, you're going to really have to just let your mind fly. I would certainly recommend doing some research as to custom directives that other people have created and why they needed them. And I think that will go a long way towards giving you some ideas.
Yeah, I kind of share the same sentiment. Like, I know when we were looking over, like, just the selectors for this, I was starting to be like, oh, wow. I mean, I had no idea you could do that. Right, like I don't even know if we talked about the fact that you can do a not selector, right? So you can say, I want it if it's not doing this, right? So there's like so many different things that you can do. And I think like another great resource to use is to look at the NPM packages you're pulling in. I know a lot of those packages, you know, if you're doing a bunch of different things, like say, I don't know. There's like a million different NPM packages for Angular, right? In a lot of cases, like the things that I've seen, they're actually directives. Like a large majority of them are directives because that's the easiest thing to package, right? Like our confirm, it would be a very simple thing to package and say, hey, bring in this confirm and you can use it. So, you know, maybe take, you know, if you want, like you're saying, expanding your viewpoint in your mind a little bit, maybe take a few moments the next time you pull in an NPM package or the NPM packages you already have and go take a look at the GitHub repo. I think you'll be surprised that a large majority of them, at least the ones that I look at, are using directives and they're using them in very intuitive, interesting ways. That as long as you just get some exposure, which is what I think you're talking about is getting the exposure piece, you'll start to utilize them more effectively. Because, you know, the whole point of the podcast isn't to, you know, get out there and write a directive tomorrow. You know, you don't want to use something just for the sake of using it. But the idea is to say, hey, am I doing something that could be better accommodated by a directive? You know, am I doing something over and over again? Am I doing something maybe inconsistently? Am I having to figure out this boilerplate logic And does a component not really make sense here? Like, do I really need to create a whole new element that doesn't exist? Or can I just extend a text box, extend a dropdown list, so something simple to give me the behavior that I want? I would encourage people to review some of the third-party things you're probably using out there on GitHub, and you'll see a lot of really great examples for directives.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, they can really get your fat out of the fire on something too, because imagine you're in a mature app that has possibly hundreds of components and templates, and then all of a sudden there's this late game feedback that comes back that says, hey, I know that we have all these inputs with these max lengths, but I don't think that this is a very good example of UI, and we should change it. And make it so that they have a count of the current number of text characters in the input along with a slash what's the max length. You've certainly seen that out there, but that's not standard UI, right? Like, that doesn't come out of the box with Angular. But could you add a directive that would selectively target those boxes and add exactly what we're talking about? You could. That could be done that way. And in that way, then you don't have to change anything else. You just add this directive, throw it into existence, everything's there.
Yeah. Yeah, the ease of implementation is so great. So awesome. Well, I think that covers the topic of directives and how we use them. Thanks, everybody, for listening. We really appreciate you following us along on our Angular journey. We're certainly looking to improve and talk about topics that are interesting to you. So please feel free, if you have feedback, questions, or comments about the show or topics you want to discuss, reach out to us on Twitter. I'm at John Graham Dev. It's G-R-A-H-A-M Dev. And Chris is at Pilgrim Secret on Twitter. We're pretty much more active than we were before we started the podcast on there. but definitely check us out on there. Also, if you want to check out my blog, I'm planning on doing a little bit more with this Azure journey I'm going on. So you can find that at johngrahamdev.com or johngraham.dev. And as always, if you're interested, we are actually hiring right now at Miles Technologies.
During Corona time, John?
During Corona time. I had my first remote interview the other day. It was interesting. It's just different. It's different not getting those social cues, you know. The same reason why this podcast has been a little different while we're doing this. I'm excited to get back and do it in person, to be honest with you. But we are hiring, so look us up on the web, and you can come and work with Chris and I on these cool, awesome Angular projects.
Yeah, that's milestechnologies.com/careers.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, great. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you so much. Have a good one.